Well, tonight we are in Genesis chapter 11, which is, again, an exciting chapter. We're right here at the Tower of Babel, coming right here. We've got that dated right around 2357. In fact, on your paper, I've got it dated, not that it's accurate, is 2358 BC, or about 100 years after the flood. Now, that all works out. I mean, if you want to try and mix in again, you know, materialism, evolution, all the misdating they've done for geology, you're going to have a problem with that. But if you allow the Bible to speak, and a lot of evidence that is in literature, in archaeology, in geology, that's a fair date. And so I'll read it right here very quickly, and then we got a few issues to talk about. And I think I can share with you a couple insights from these verses, because there's, for me, there's about five or six things like, what does this mean? What are they talking about? Like they wanted to make a name for themselves. What does that mean? You know, they want to be famous. Well, there's not that many people in the world. They're already famous. There's only one, you know, basic group of people, one language. Or God comes down and sees what they're doing and says, well, now that they've come together, there's nothing that will that I can keep them from. They can accomplish, in a sense, anything. I mean, what does that mean? That anything will be possible for them. They set their mind to it, they can achieve it. It's like, what is that referring to? Some of these things I'll be able to give a little bit more insight into. I kind of feel like every time I study or teach, I'm moving a little bit closer to the goal of full understanding. But, you know, you always get down to the 20 or the 15, and then it's like, I just can't get the last 15 yards. I've still got a few questions. But I feel like I understand a little bit more. In fact, one of the things I've corrected is, I think, is Peleg. Do we got Peleg on here somewhere? Yeah, Peleg. In his day, we saw last week in chapter 10, the earth was divided. Now, I believe the continental plates moved and shifted. And in fact, in Hope for Mary's Last Generation, 2007, I described Peleg, whose name means the division. Again, it kind of means like even like a canal is divided where water flows. I built the case that, and some people do also, that during his day, 100 years after the flood, the continental plates divided and the earth split apart. It says in his day, the earth was divided. Okay, that's clever. You're reading the Bible. But I do not think that makes sense any longer. One, for scientific reasons. And number two, for timing. Peleg is alive during the Tower of Babel. His name means division in chapter 10. And that whole thing is about division. And chapter 11 is talking about division and the earth being divided. I think the reference to Peleg, in his day the earth was divided, is a reference to this very event, the Tower of Babel. Now, scientifically, and again, it's a shame sometimes when people like me teach the Bible, or anybody teaches the Bible, because you really want to do a fair job. You really need to understand the fullness of creation, scientifically, linguistically, anthropology, everything, medically. And then you should really understand the fullness of the deity before you start shooting your mouth off. Which, of course, one, that's going to be impossible because we can never fully understand God. Second, you can't conquer science and anthropology and geology and all philosophy and all of these things before you start teaching the Word of God. Like we talked last night about the book of John, 1 John, and the Gospel. It's simple. It communicates. It's written by a fisherman, not taking anything away from John. But it's like all of Jesus' disciples, you notice he never tapped into the religious crowd to bring some disciples alongside of him specifically. They all seem to be career people with businesses or, you know, laboring jobs. Jesus himself, he was a carpenter. He wasn't known as, you know, an outstanding student in rabbi school. He was known as the carpenter. In fact, that was kind of one of his problems. Like, how can this be anybody? We know his father. He's a carpenter. He was a carpenter. What's he know? And so there is, again, of course, Jesus was Jesus. But again, his disciples were humans. Nonetheless, scientifically, going back to Peleg's day and the earth being divided, as we read with the flood, part of the cause of the flood was the fountains of the deep, the plates of the earth opened up and water gushed up, you know, causing a huge, you know, tsunamis. Continental plates were moving, which would have wiped out everything. If the continental plates were wiped out or opened up and moved, we're not talking continental drift, like just continents just slowly floating across. We're talking about a division. And once, you know, even like an earthquake creates tsunamis that can wipe out land, wipe out islands from the face of the earth. So if you're going to have the continental plates moving and the actual scientific result being just catastrophic destruction, that's the flood of Noah. 100 years later, when the earth is divided, we're not wiping out continents and people and civilizations. The language is being confused and they're being divided. So Peleg, I think that's clearly the division. That's where I'm at now. That's from 2007 to 2024. I try to make a case for that, but as I've studied, it's pretty clear. Peleg is alive. Now, is he born? When did it take place? Was it the year he was born? Is it early in his life? Is he named because of that? Nonetheless, Peleg is alive during this time. And so that's 2358. Nonetheless, there's several other questions. I'm going to read chapter 11, verses 1 through 9 is what we're talking about tonight. And I will say this, again, I keep introducing it. You may have a question because we're reading chronological order. I do not think we're reading chronological order. I don't think this narrative happens after these events. It happens and causes chapter 10, the division of the nations. Another thing that's going to want to consider is Nimrod, the one who's building the tower. Now, if you remember, Nimrod is conquering nations, civilizations, cities. So it appears to me, and I think it's correct, Nimrod is going to come after the Tower of Babel. He's not going to be the guy, the Antichrist, building the Tower of Babel. So again, keep that in mind. I'll show you that. And if you don't agree with my proofs, that's good. That's healthy. That means I'm glad I don't agree with myself anymore in 2007. So that's part of growing. So here we go. Chapter 11, verse 1. NIV. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. And again, notice language, speech, those are two different words. We'll show you. As men moved eastward, and that's interesting, meaning, okay, that's the NIV has eastward. And if you look there in a footnote, because I didn't even notice that when I was studying, because I'm using the Hebrew, it's moved from the east. They're moving west. They're moving back out of the mountains west to Shinar. So we'll talk about that also. In fact, I never noticed that, but I've been using the Hebrew and the English Standard. So anyway, keep that in mind. There's another discrepancy. They found a plain in Shinar, and we know where that's at. That's Sumer, that's Mesopotamia, and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone, mainly because there's no stone in that area. The stone would be up in the mountainous areas where they've come from. Now they've come down into the plain. There's no stones. So they made bricks instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens. Now again, that sounds ridiculous. How stupid are these people? They're going to build a tower, a skyscraper, until they can walk into heaven. Well, that's not what that's saying. Because it's like, I mean, these people are so barbaric, they think the heavens, just they just keep building a ladder higher and higher and higher. Pretty soon they can touch heaven. That's not what they're thinking. They're building two things, a city and a tower that reaches to the heavens. And that's easy to explain when we get into some text. So that we may make a name for ourselves. I'm not absolutely convinced I understand what that's referring to. And not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. That's pretty clear what they're talking about there. Both Adam and Noah were told, fill the earth. These people are thinking, that weakens us. If we just stay together and make a one unified civilization here, that's what we're going to do. And That's not, they're in a sense rebellion. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower. Again, that's going to be key. The Lord came down. And it's almost ironic. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the men were building. They're building the tower and they're building the city. The Lord said, and that's Yahweh. If you notice in the NIV, they're all capital letters. So Yahweh said, if as one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this. Now this is again a crazy verse. Then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Now does the Lord mean what that seems to say? Come, let us go down and confuse their language so that they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them from there over all the earth. And again, the scattering was not Him pushing them. It was Him manipulating their languages, so they had to separate into their own clans, tribes, becoming nations. And they stopped. Now notice, this is again for some of you. I don't want to be critical of you, but for some of you, this is a line you don't know. And they stopped building the what? City. That is why it is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the languages of the whole world. From there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. Again, whole earth should be considered. That's when people came to Europe. They came across to North America. They came through Central America and down into South America. That's when they went down to Australia. They filled the whole earth. And again, up in here, where he says something about, I figure where the verse is at 4, where it talks about build the tower, it is in the perfect tense, meaning the tower was built. The tower was built. And you got, you know, images, paintings from the Middle Ages, you've got movies, you know, cheap movies. You know, God blowing the tower up, lightning striking the tower, or the tower never being finished. The text seems to say the tower was finished and functioning. He came down and they couldn't finish the city because it didn't go the way they wanted it to go. Okay, so that's the text. Now some information. First of all, point one on the first page, this is written, because I say this is part of a narrative that is part of what's causing chapter 10. And point one, and he got letters A through H-I-J-K-L there. The organization through these genealogies follows this pattern. It follows the pattern of, I should write, Genesis 11, 1 through 9. Is that right? What we're doing here? This is going to be a genealogy, and then there's going to be a narrative. And then more genealogy with a narrative. More genealogy with a narrative. The genealogies are important because it is tracking the progression of human history. But every once in a while, what's happening, they're going to insert a narrative. Now, you can see this right here. Chapter 5, verse 32. That's the genealogy of Noah's sons begins. But then they interrupt right away, or Moses interrupts the genealogy of Noah's sons with a narrative, chapter 6, verse 1 through 8, about the sons of God. And there's our story about the sons of God came to the daughters of men. Okay, when we're finished with that story, we go right back to chapter 6, verse 9, and continue the genealogy of Noah's sons up until chapter 6, verse 10. And then we insert another narrative about the flood. That goes from chapter 6 up through chapter 9. And then chapter 9, after the flood wraps up the discussion there, we go back to the genealogy of Noah's sons for a couple verses, only to interrupt it with the curse of Canaan, because you've got to understand this. You've got to understand the sons of God. You've got to understand the flood. You've got to understand the curse of Canaan. And then we return to the genealogy of Noah's sons from chapter 9 through chapter 10, verse 32. That's what we did last week. But to understand why did that happen, you have to understand the Tower of Babel. And when we finish chapter 9 tonight, we'll go back to chapter 11, verse 10, and continue the genealogy of Shem's sons. And this will continue until we get to chapter 12, verse 1. And we go from chapter 12 all the way to chapter 35 with a narrative about Abraham. Now, during that narrative, we're going to have a break in there, a little section about Abraham's brother Nahor, and his genealogy is going to be inserted in there. But then, after the narrative of Abraham, chapter 35, chapter 35 and 36, chapter 35 ends with the genealogy of Jacob, and chapter 36 is all the genealogy of Esau, of which we then go to chapter 37, verse 1, and you think you're still talking about the story of Abraham, but you're not, because chapter 37, verse 1, you just ended a genealogy in chapter 36 of Esau's generations. Chapter 37, verse 1 begins a narrative about Joseph. In fact, it says in chapter 37, verse 2, this is the toledot of Jacob. And if you remember, the toledot is, it refers to the generation or the account, the written document. So each of these begins with that point 2. The events of Genesis 11 happened before the dispersion of the people and the territories, because in Genesis 10, it talks about their lands, their own language, their clans, and their nations, which is all caused by this narrative that we're seeing tonight. Possibly, in chapter, Nimrod tried to conquer and reunite after the time. We talked about Nimrod last week, but he was actually trying to recover what they lost at the Tower of Babel. And again, some people say Nimrod was building the tower, and he was the head, and that's fine if you want to put it together that way. But I think he's already facing a world with languages and nations, and he's trying to rebuild and bring it back together as the great leader. Also interesting here, point 4, the geological and hydrological studies show that there was a drying out of the land of summer during this exact time period. Now look at this. Again, it makes sense. We're coming down the timeline here, and we have the flood. With the flood, there would have been an enormous amount of water on the earth. Water erupted from the earth. The continental plates moved apart, so some of the water could drain into deeper oceans. Land, some mountains were formed. But a lot of that water went up into the upper atmosphere, froze, and came down as snow. Now, we know this. Science supports these ideas. You've always got a different idea of why it happened. But you've got mammoths that are covered in ice with green grass in their mouths, in their stomachs. In fact, some of the plants they're eating are tropical plants. So some of the animals that are buried in the ice age are actually tropical animals where the earth was different, but it's that snow, that ice that froze, came down and just buried certain animals, and it stayed frozen for a while. So some of that water's frozen. So at this time, during the Tower of Babel, there is the ice age, but the ice is starting to melt. It's starting to even out. So the oceans, again, sounds like global warming, but the oceans are not as high at this time as they're going to be, say, in Moses' time. Because during those years, the icebergs, the frozen ice, is going to start melting and filling up. So that means you're going to be able to go from Europe and possibly not even, we can't even imagine today, but walk across, what do you call it, the Bering Strait, walk across from Europe into Canada, or walk across from, you know, Russia into Alaska. There's, well, everybody, you know, even, you know, secular humanists talk about people making those journeys. And it all makes sense that the ice is melting, but also the water's draining off of the land. And as it's draining, like, for example, into the Persian Gulf, that Gulf of China, in fact, you can see maps showing the Persian Gulf was higher, and then it's receding, and also those people, well, if you turn the page, I believe, yeah, right here. This is where we'll look at here next. On page 2, you've got your typical map here. The Persian Gulf, the Tigris River, the Euphrates River, and then you're going to have the Zargos Mountains over here. Now, the Zargos Mountains, you can see right there, Zagros Mountains over here, the mountain range, and up in here, Mount Ararat is up in here in, you know, southern Turkey. You see it's on the map there. The Mount Ararat, where Moses' ark landed, that's what we call Mount Ararat. But you know, it's not like we found the ark there. That's the mountain they call Mount Ararat. Mount Ararat, that is the area of Mount Ararat. It's a different mountain range, but it's still, Zagros goes up, Zagros mountains go up into southern Turkey. So Moses could have landed anywhere in this mountain range here. Now again, we've got Mount Ararat. If they find the ark on Mount Ararat, some people think they have, they got all, but there's nothing absolute. Plus it's been frozen, it's treacherous. But this is where Moses or Noah would have settled. And right there, got Noah settled here. But as the water began to drain out of the land between the two rivers, Mesopotamia, Shinar, it's called in Genesis here, or it's going to become Summer, and then Acadia, they moved, right there it says they moved from the east. So they're moving from, this is where the people are. Now Moses, I'm going to say Moses again, I've said it already, I'm going to say it again, it's stuck in my head. Noah is going to come, he's still alive. Noah, Shem, we get our chart back up here. Shem is going to be alive. Shem is going to live longer than Abraham. Do you understand? Jacob is going to be 50 years old when Shem dies, if you follow the biblical chronology. So that's important for all these stories. So these guys are living right up in here. And as this drained out, science says, geology shows this dried out, and they began to move into this plain. Now, let's read the text here. I go back to page 1. Chapter 11, verse 1, right there on page 1. I've got the Hebrew there, and I've got two words in boxes that are kind of important. I'm not sure what to do with them. I'll read the literal Hebrew. And had all the earth language one and speech one. And the word, the first word, language, in the English Standard says, now the whole earth had one language, that is the word shafa. It means lip, speech, or edge. So lip, speech, or edge. And it's translated language. And if you want to make it simple for yourself, you can see the Strong's number, 8193. That's the Strong's number, and that's the Hebrew number for it. And the same, the English Standard says, words. That is the word dabar. The Hebrew word dabar means speech, word, or to speak. So it almost looks like, if you want to make a distinction, they're not synonyms. They can't be used as synonyms. One is language. It's your speech. It's your lip. The other is speaking the language. One is the language. The other could be the vocabulary, the words. This is the language, the structure. These are the vocabulary, the words. And so they've got the same language. And again, I'm dumbing this down. The same language with the same vocabulary. Now, something's going to, again, how does this happen? I don't know. Point one, language, shafa, and speech, dabar, are related but are not interchangeable. Language speaks of one language. This one language had a common unified vocabulary, one speech. The account begins with a functioning universal language. This account ends with a destroyed universal language. Now, how that happened, I don't know. Someone may know. But no one's writing books about telling exactly how it mechanically happened in their heads. Now, I will say this, too. We talk about the ages of people. We've already talked about the clear breakdown. The flood, people are living almost 900 years before the flood. After the flood, let's just say 400 years in general. After the Tower of Babel, it drops down to 200 and keeps dropping until it gets down to, you know, Moses lives 120 years and David ends up being 70. But right here, the reasons for, and I've talked about this before, the reasons for this extended life is possibly the climate was different, possibly more oxygen, clearly they were eating vegetables or vegetation, because after the flood, God gives them permission to eat meat. So it could be the level of oxygen. It could be the diets changed. It could be something about the climate. But understand, we can control oxygen. We can control, some people are vegetarians. So, I mean, if people are living, if it's the vegetarian diet, well then, we should have people living 200, 300, 400 years because they're vegan, you know. But you don't necessarily see the difference. In fact, you watch the government studies, they tell you to stop eating eggs, start eating eggs. They say butter's bad for you, start using butter. Use our margarine. No, I'm going to use the butter, not your margarine. So that's another whole story. So again, you can say oxygen, you can say diet. But what is interesting right here is what came out of the flood was one family. And one family then began to populate the earth. And one of Noah's ancestors was Lamech, who lived 777 years, which is kind of like, man, what's wrong? He died of something young because he didn't live to the 900. And Noah's then is going to possibly have a gene. See, this is probably what it is. It's probably got to do with genes. Once again, way out of my area. I don't understand weather patterns. I don't understand, you know, science to the, you know, all the levels of science. And I'm definitely not a geneticist, if that's what you would say. But he's going to then marry his wife, and they may have combined genes that then it reduced the age, and age started decreasing. And then you have another bottleneck right here at Babel, where they're going to then have a branch off again, and it's going to compound those genes into pools, and it may be God's way. Now, one writer said this, God's way of controlling humanity and the sin nature. We've already seen God do certain things to we're going to see him do this right here. Man is so capable that if with one language, a united vocabulary, nothing will be impossible for him. I'm going to hurt man. I'm going to cause him to have confusion of language. There. That'll slow him down, because he's created in God's image, but he's got a sin nature. So with all this potential, like God-like potential in God's image, combined with a sin nature, man can become very evil. So we'll confuse them and slow down so they can't tap into their true potential. The same thing here. God may be controlling. He designed man not to live 900 years. He designed man to do what? Live forever. He's in paradise. There's no death. How do you know Adam would live forever? There's no death. The death is a non-existing identity until it enters into creation. So man is designed to live forever. These are things that are possibly slowing him down so man doesn't destroy the plan of God before the Messiah gets here, salvation is earned, the world hears about the gospel, and God builds his kingdom, and then the end will come. And so this genetics of the bottlenecking, and if Noah and his wife and their sons had a genetic, say, default, or fault, that then was reproduced, it's going to cause man to slow down the age process, and they're going to die younger, which again will give God more time to work his plan. Again, that's hypothetical, and that's really not what we're talking about tonight. But again, it's got to be, I think it's got to be genetic, because if we can affect food, we can affect oxygen, you know, you can wear sunscreen, you know, don't want to get cancer, skin cancer, wear sunscreen, I get sunscreen cancer, I don't know. Okay, so right there, that's the main thing there, and the earth had one language and the same words. Turn the page. Now, and as the people migrated, now here's the English Standard Version, and as the people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Now this is the first time men have... The Garden of Eden is going to be in the east. Now, I've got these verses written down for you right there, bottom of the page, chapter Genesis 2, verse 8. And the Lord God planted a garden in Eden in the east, and there he put the man whom he had formed. Now, once at first, the Garden of Eden and that earth, that topography's changed. Continental plates have moved. The whole surface is wiped out. There was one water source here that bubbled up out of the ground and went in four directions, making four rivers. And they're called the Euphrates and the Gihon Spring or Gihon River. But a lot of times, those probably don't exist. They probably reuse the name of some of the cities. They probably reuse the names of some of these rivers. You know, it's like the Tigris and Euphrates are not necessarily the exact, they're rivers, but they're probably not where Eden was. So where Eden is at, it's in the east. It's east of something. What's it east of? I don't know. It'd be nice to say it's east of Israel. You know, east of the promised land. Okay, now watch this. Then a man sins, Genesis page 3, Genesis 3:24, man sins and he drove him, God drove man, and at the east of the Garden of Eden, he placed the cherubim and the flaming sword that turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life. So here, in this garden is the tree of life, but man was driven away, and on this east side, the cherubim are there, you'll never find this. And so man goes further east. Point C, Genesis 4:16. Then Cain went from there, from the presence of the Lord, and settled in the land of Nod, meaning wandering. So he's wandering where? Well, he's wandering east of Eden. So this is where Adam and Eve started. This is where Adam and Eve moved. Cain kills his brother. He moves further east away from Adam. So Adam can't get to God because of the cherubim. Cain has to wander over here in the east. And then, not that it's a direct connection, but in Genesis chapter 8, verse 14, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. Again, that's not Mount Ararat. That's the mountain range called Ararat. And like right there, today's Mount Ararat is not in the Zagros Mountains, but Zagros Mountains are a long mountain range. It's from Iran, northern Iraq, up into southeast Turkey, which is right where the mountains of Iran are. And so that's where Moses or Noah is going to be, up here in the mountains in the east. That's where Noah settled. That's where he planted his vineyard. They're living up here in the high country. And then as the water drains out, now they move back from the east. Now they're moving west. That's what this verse is saying. I'll read it one more time. And as people migrated from the east, they found a plain. So the people that are migrating are Noah's descendants, you know, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, their families. They're migrating back down into the plain. And that's what's taking place historically. All right. Chapter 11, verse 3. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And so again, there's no rocks, stones like they have further into the mountain ranges. And so they're baking, that's baking bricks, but also baking tile, or, you know, with the firing of tile. And they made brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. And bitumen, you can see the word there, that it's asphalt. So it's, they're using asphalt and tile. They're using baked tile, baked bricks, and asphalt to put this together. They said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. Point one, at the bottom of page 3, the people were building a tower and a city. It appears the tower was completed since the Lord came down to it, but in chapter 11, verse 8, clearly says that the city building project was not completed. Now, this tower would have, everybody knows this, would have been, in this time, a ziggurat. Now, a ziggurat, it's a high tower. Now, some things about, well, I'll tell you, here they are. Instead of stumbling through this, I'll just read you a list. You can see on the very back page, I've got a picture of, which is interesting, you can see on the back page, ziggurats, or pyramids, or towers, or sacrificial high places. And they're all across the world. I mean, they're in Iran, Egypt, they're in Iraq, they're in China, they're in Sudan, they're in Italy, Mexico, China, Indonesia, Polynesia, Mexico, Cambodia. And the thing is, that makes sense, just like we're going to see the accounts of the flood in all those cultures. We're going to see an account of the languages being confused in all those cultures. And this ziggurat, as these people are scattered, they take with them the story of the creation, the story of the flood, the story of the confusing of languages, and this ideal of building these structures, these high towers. Now, the original ziggurat in bottom of page 3, the original, going to page 4 very quickly, the original ziggurat had no inside. A pyramid, as you know, is going to have chambers on the inside. There's going to be tunnels, channels going down there. It's a burial place. And it may be connected to a ziggurat, the idea, but a ziggurat is going to be mainly a very high tower. We'll do this in steps like this if you want to. So again, this is not, I wasn't, this, I don't know. But one of the key things is going to be a ramp. There's going to be a ramp. And on the top of this, there's going to be a room. And in this room is going to be a bed, and there's going to be a table. Now, some things, I'll read these all to you here right down the list. But this is not a place, let me turn the page, and maybe I can just find a list for you. Where is it at? It is not. Yeah, point four. This is not a place for people to go up here and try to reach heaven. They're not trying to reach into heaven. Point 4a. Point B. It is not so high that it reached into what the ancients supposedly thought was heaven. They're not like trying to build a spaceship with stairs. That makes sense if you're just making stuff up, but if you're looking at history, that's ridiculous. These people are much brighter than possibly we are. I mean, they're living hundreds of years, nonetheless. This is something I considered for a while. It is not to flee in order to escape another flood. Because God flooded the earth, let's build a tower, and people write about this, a tower so high that when it floods, we'll run up here and we won't die in the flood. Okay, well, how many, the whole world up there? I mean, who are you going to say? It's like, instead of building an ark, we're going to build a tower. That's a cute idea, but it's unfounded. It's not to offer sacrifices or burnt offerings or incenses. You will find high places, but this was not a high place. It is not for astronomical observation. They're not studying the stars. Now, these people studied the stars. We see a lot of things like that. But they're not up here with, they're not stargazers. And it's not for burial. So, point B at the top of the page. The outside surface or the facade was covered with kiln-fired brick or tile. So this was built with brick, and then on the outside was built with kiln-fired tile. So it's very nice. The ziggurat are dedicated to a deity. There is involved in here a god. They did not worship multiple gods. Some cities would have several ziggurats. Every ziggurat had a particular deity. Archaeologists have found 30 ziggurats in the area of Sumer. And in ancient texts, like we see up in here, there's more. They talk about many more that are gone. The architectural features of a ziggurat were this: a stairway or ramp leading to the top. Okay? A small room at the top with a bed, a table for the god. The sides of the ziggurat could be 60 to 200 feet long. For perspective, I kind of try to figure this out. A bowling lane is 62 feet long. So this base could be as long as a bowling lane, or it could be up to 200 feet, which would be as big as a cargo ship or a naval vessel. So 60, depending on, probably on your god and how much finances you had, how big the offerings were that week. Ziggurats were not part of the worship rituals in Mesopotamia. They didn't go up there and worship. According to ancient literature, people did not use the ziggurat for anything. It was a sacred place and off limits to people for common use. So you didn't go to the stairs and walk up and take an offering to your god. No. In fact, I'm going to read down here eventually. There's a temple down here for the god. This is where your god was worshipped, in the temple at the base of the ziggurat. This is where the worship took place. You can maybe see where this is going. It fits exactly with the text. Point F. This is fun. The names given to ziggurats indicate the purpose of these towers. There's three that I can give you. The name, one of the ziggurats in Babylon, a name Etemenanki, means temple of the foundation of heaven and earth. This is the temple of the foundation of heaven and earth. Another one, at Larsa, these are all off our maps for the last few weeks, the name means temple that links heaven and earth. And at Sippur, the name means temple of the stairway to pure heaven, which makes you really reconsider the whole Stairway to Heaven song. That was our theme song, I think, for our junior, senior prom, Stairway to Heaven. This is what it is. This is a stairway to heaven. That's what this is. The ziggurat supported the stairway, so this was all supporting this stairway. The ziggurat was designed as a place for the god to come down to visit the people. They wanted to make it. This is the temple. They built it to heaven. Why? They're not going to heaven. God is going to come down in his room with a table, all the conveniences. It's a hotel. Welcome to our ziggurat. Welcome to the foundation of heaven and earth together. And there's a bed, and of course you know what's in the bed waiting for him. With all the P. Diddy stuff, we're not going to go too much further with that. But there would be one person up there waiting, and there'd be a table with some food for the God to come down, and then he would then come down and visit the people and possibly, hopefully, make an appearance in his temple where he would be worshipped. And then he would ascend again back to heaven. The sole purpose of the ziggurat, point G2, was for the convenience of the God. The room, the bed, the table at the top were there to provide comforts and services to the God. At the top was a gate of the gods, and at the bottom was a freestanding temple where the invited God could enter for worship. Now, I'm going to just jump over here and read. Yeah, chapter, page 5. Are you ready? This is the funny part. This is the funny part. I mean, you may not find it funny, but it's like when you understand that, it's kind of like, so what's God doing? Here's what God's doing. And the Lord, Yahweh, came down to see the city and the tower. Guess what Yahweh did? All right, I'll play. Yahweh came down. It's like, holy smokes. That's not, you know, Enlil or Enuma or whoever. It's like Yahweh comes down and takes a look. Now again, Yahweh is going to, he's going to walk. Again, that's all it says. Yahweh, it doesn't say they took photos and selfies. It doesn't say he had a news article. He appeared at a talk show. I'm not sure. In my mind, my Sunday school mind, no one saw him come down. Him and a couple angels came down kind of like ghosts and kind of floated around and kind of looked at things, and no one even knew they were there. But Adam knew he was there. Noah knew he was there. Abraham had lunch with him. Sarah made dinner for him and the angels. We can go through the Bible. Yeah, it's called a theophany. So it is possible that Yahweh says, and just probably scared the heebie-jeebies out of some people because God, it said, well, I'll just read the text. And Yahweh came down to see the city and the temple which the children of man had built. Let's go check this out. There's that word, built. See, and I've got it circled in the Hebrew. It's the perfect tense, meaning it was built. He came down because the room was there, the table was there, the bed was there. He came down, possibly walked down the ramp, and it's like, yeah, this ain't good. Yeah, we're moving way too fast. I mean, Elon Musk is already ready to shoot rockets into the atmosphere, and we've got Bill Gates has got some kind of software program going here. This thing's going to wrap up, and we've got Fauci making vaccinations. It's like, oh, Iran's got missiles. It's like, yeah, we got to, okay. And then whatever he does, all of a sudden it's like the missile program stopped, the software program stopped, the vaccination program got confused, and everybody's off back. Whoa, it's like, ah, and he stopped the process. Why? Because he hates mankind? No, because he loves mankind, because if they're all allowed to go right into the FN times with all their whatever's developing that man can destroy his own world with, we got to have the creation of Israel, we've got to have the coming of the Messiah, the death, the resurrection, we've got to have all of church, the proclamation of the gospel, because Abraham's got to be blessed and chosen so that all the nations can be blessed. But if this goes here, and he says nothing will be impossible for him, that means overthrowing the entire plan of God. Remember, we talk on Sundays in Revelation. Jesus said in Matthew 24, if those days, the Great Tribulation, were not cut short, no flesh would be left. In other words, for the end times to happen, end times is going to start happening that last 70th week, the first 3.5 years, and then we're going to have the Great Tribulation after the Antichrist reveals himself in the temple proclaiming to God, and the Great Tribulation takes place, and there's all kinds of martyrdom, all kinds of people being killed. God says, those days, Jesus, if those days were not cut short, no one would be left. Same thing here. If this wasn't stopped, there'd be no one left. I mean, we would not have, and welcome to the kingdom of God. They're all gone. There's no one left. And so I assume that's what we're talking about here. Okay. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of man had made. And chapter 11, verse 6. And the Lord said, now here's that quote, behold, they are one people. See, they're united. That's why I asked one of my sons a question. What is better, unity or a divide? Do you want a unifier as a leader? Do you want a unifier or a divider? Unifier. Well, that's not Yahweh. Because right here, he's dividing. Jesus says, I've not come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. I'm going to cause division. Even the parables. When the Lord comes, he'll divide the wheat from the weeds. He'll divide the sheep from the goat. I mean, Yahweh's about division. Why? Because there's evil and there's good. And we got to decide which one. Well, let's just all unite. No. If God's dividing, who's uniting? Saint. We're just bringing everybody, let's just water this down, bring everybody together, and tap into our potential. God says, no, not without me. And he causes division. Which is, again, doesn't sound like a very, very Christian thing. Doesn't sound like Yahweh's a very Christian guy. Because a good Christian passion would be a uniter, not a divider. Hey, just think about that. There's another two words I used also. I can't remember what I used. But nonetheless, behold, they are one people, and they have all one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Is that not amazing? And there you got up there, you got the two boxes of the word letter is the word, or language is again the word safa, will be withheld. That means to cut off, make inaccessible. Nothing will be cut off from them. Nothing will be inaccessible to them. Nothing will be enclosed to them. Everything will be open and available for them. And so all that they devise, they do. Devise means to consider, to purpose, or to devise. Anything their God-created brain, mind can think of and come up with, they will be able to do. I created them this way. I created them to be rulers of the earth, to conquer and have dominion over the whole earth. And now, as they've unified, all these men created in God's image have come together. We got to confuse this. And he shuts down their hardware program. I mean, all their hardware gets all confused, their software gets all confused. Again, how that happens, I do not know. Okay, next thing. Chapter 11, verse 7. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language so that they may not understand one another's speech. You can compare the words right there. Talking about language. Confuse is the word. You can see right there in the square box, the word confuse is the word belal. Belal. Which means to mingle, mix, or confuse. Balal is going to be the root word for the word coming up, Babel, which is coming up here. So he's going to balal their language, balal their shafa. So the Lord dispersed them, chapter 11, verse 8, dispersed them from there over the face of the earth. Again, face of the earth, not just into Egypt and Europe. They're going all across the world. Now, it may have taken between, again, some people have done some research on this, it may have taken between 50 to like 400 years with that movement as they dispersed to reach, if they went across, like went up into Europe, went across into Canada, down North America, Central America, it may have taken them 50 to 400 years to reach South America, that they're thinking. Now they could travel by very clearly in chapter 10, these are the seafaring people. So there, some of them went right to the Mediterranean Sea. Once they get the Mediterranean Sea, they can just go right across the Atlantic Ocean. So they can be, depending on if they're sailing or if they're migrating. But within 400 years, the world is, it's got people everywhere. And that's normal. That's not even stretching the truth. Chapter 11, verse 9, therefore its name was called Babel. Now that's a different word. Babel comes from the word Balel. Babel is how you'd say it, you know, it's right out of Hebrew. Comes from Balel. Babel is the Eastern Mediterranean Empire and its capital, it's the city. Therefore its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. And I'm running out of time. Here. Prim asked me a great question last week at the end of class, in getting ready for this, so that I wasn't stumbling and fumbling around up here when he asked me then tonight. But again, I keep talking about the toledotes, the written documents. Like, potentially, like Adam, I have no trouble thinking, now again, in my secular mind, Adam can't write. But in the biblical view, he can talk. He's a grown adult. He's naming the animals. Surely he can write. Clearly, Noah can write. So we got people that are writing, all we got the toledote of these people that are writing all the way through. But at Peleg's day, the earth is divided. What happened to the language? Like we like to say, I like to say, Moses had original documents or copies of documents going back to Jacob's toledote, the Terah's toledote, Noah's toledote, all the way back to the toledote of Adam. He had these written documents. Well, right here, if the languages are confused, what good are these toledotes in a language that, it's like looking at hieroglyphics, nobody understands them. And so, how did that take place? There's several things. Point one, what is the original language? Was the original language lost, confused? Did the original language the whole world use, any of it continue? Is that language still available today? So, possible answers. Now, this is from Bodhi Hodges' book, Tower of Babel. Here's A, B, C, D are four options of what could have happened. Some of them are better than others. The original language could have survived the Tower of Babel. It doesn't say they forgot it. Someone may have remembered it. If they divide them up, one nation may have kept it. One option, right, very clear option, is, well, it must have been Hebrew. Yahweh must have spoke Hebrew to Adam, the original language, and it just kept going and everything else branched off of that. That's one way of thinking. That's a safe answer. Again, I don't have an absolute answer. The original language could have survived. Number B, letter B. The original language was preserved through Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, but was not transferred to their descendants. Maybe only, come in, you're Noah, now you're 700 years old, and all of a sudden one day it's like, I just forgot. Now again, if you're Galen and you're getting old, it's like, what's that, where I forgot my language? Okay, that's old age. But Noah just like forgets his language. Noah didn't like, and then Shem, Ham, Japheth, they all forgot their language. So people up in the mountains, are they just forgetting their language? They would have kept their language. That would be the idea there. And they would have continued to teach others. Point C, the original language was completely lost at the Tower of Babel and a new language took its place. If that took place, it was all gone, you still have this option. And that's point C1. This is, we could do the math and look at it. It's on your charts. Adam and Methuselah. Now, Adam could have talked to Methuselah. They were alive for the same time. For 243 years, they lived at the same time period. So for as old as our nation is, Adam and Methuselah would have lived together. Methuselah and Noah were alive at the same time for 650 years. Shem died 35 years after Abraham died, and Jacob was 50 years old. So going from Adam to Jacob, and you've got the toledote of Jacob, you've got Adam talking to Methuselah, Methuselah talking to Noah, and Noah talking to Shem, and that's father talking to son, talking to Jacob. I mean, you've got there's more than one path to get there. And then the original language at the Tower of Babel was divided into sub-languages, so there was this solid language, and just different parts of it broke off. I guess it could be similar to kids, you know, a younger generation or an older generation, we all speak English, but you can talk to a teenager and it's kind of like, you know, the slang, the way they use words. This new thing that I've caught on, not caught on, but they say, well, it's been a minute. So you haven't seen somebody for a long time. And then this one kid said, it's been a minute. It's been longer than a minute. But you know what minute means? Minute means it's been a long time. No, a minute, like, it's only six, that's not that much time. It'll just take me a minute. I'll be right back, it'll just take me a minute. Well, to a kid, he says, well, it's been a minute. Meaning, you've been gone forever. So I mean, minute, it's going two different directions. For example. So in other words, there's the language, but the vocabulary and the meaning of the words could have just branched off. Again, those are some options. Today, there are over 6,900 languages in the world. Now, I don't have time to read this to you, but you don't want me to read it to you. But here are three pages. This is out of Bodhi's book, and I just copied it. I just took pictures of it, and then I gave him credit. There's a picture on page 11, giving Bodhi Hodge credit. But this is all the accounts from the Aztecs. We got from Central America, Western North America, East Africa, Northeast India, the Pacific Islands, all talking about this event in all these different places. Something about the god, if he got mad, if he whatever, something happened, and the people at one time had the same language, and then everything got confused. And there's eight on that page, there's 10 more on the next page, including Greece, the Incas, Central Africa, Congo, Europe, then you got like five more. There's 23 total examples from ancient writings, ancient stories of the god confusing. At one point, the world had a creation, they had a flood, and now there was one language and it all got confused. And it comes from all those cultures. And then there's two more things written there. One is I've got a cuneiform tablet there for you to look at from 2100 right here. It dates back to, if this takes place in 2358, 2357, this cuneiform tablet dates to 2100 BC. Within 200 years of this event, this cuneiform tablet was written. It says, in those days, the lands of Suber and Hamazi, harmony-tongued summer. You know how harmony-tongued summer is? That's one language in Shinar. That's the same phrase. The great land of the decrees of princeship, Uri, the land having all that is appropriate, the land of Martu, resting in security, the whole universe, the people in unison, to Enlil, that's the god, to one tongue spoke. Then Enki, another god, the lord of abundance, whose commands are trustworthy. Now be careful, I don't want to overread this, because Enlil and Enki are not Yahweh, but to the perverted mind, the decomposing, the breakdown of religion, they could be talking about the figure Yahweh, who they have recreated or they don't understand. So Enki, the Lord of Abundance, whose commands are trustworthy, that could be Yahweh, the Lord of Abundance, whose commands are trustworthy, the Lord of Wisdom, who understands the land, the leader of the gods, endowed with wisdom, the Lord Eridu, changed the speech in their mouths, brought contention into it, into the speech of man that until then had been one. So right there, all you got to do is change the word Enki or Enlil to Yahweh. Yeah, change the name, the god Enki to Yahweh, and that's chapter 11, verses 1 through 9, on a cuneiform tablet 200 years after this took place. And again, that's just one of many examples. Again, I am not saying Yahweh is a pagan god, but Yahweh was the original God, and even Nimrod, is, you know, his description is, you know, uses Yahweh in the description. So, anyway, that is what takes place there. We'll go back to chapter 11 next week and talk about the family of Shem setting up the coming of Abraham. And like we said earlier, I have time for a new chart here. We've exhausted this. Well, I ran out of room on the chart and haven't exhausted the topic. I appreciate you being here. There's many questions. Keep studying. I'll pray and we're done. Father, I do thank you for the chance to look into these things. I ask that we may hear and understand your truth, that we would not exaggerate or sensationalize your word or history, but that we would find the truth and walk in that truth and be led in light today in our own times. We do pray for our generation. We pray for the coming presidential election and ask that our country may see a time of peace and recovery, that we again may bless the world as Abraham blessed the nation. We ask that our nation may still be a blessing at this time. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.